Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. This is Way Back Playback, episode number 319. As this week, we bring you the first hour of NWA Halloween Havoc 1989. Hello, you people. I am Pat McNeil. Normally, I'm joined on this program by the other half of the podcasting tag team champions of time and space, Jim Valley. As many of you know, Jim is recovering from a non-COVID autoimmune system issue. He has been moved out of the ICU since we talked to you last and is currently in an acute care facility. He suffers from GPA disease, formerly known as Wegener's. It's been in remission. He's gone through laryngitis, pneumonia, and shingles. He's getting the best care he can. And as a matter of fact, there's pictures on Carrie's Facebook today, his wife Carrie, of Sherman the cat being allowed in to visit him, which I know Jim has to be thrilled with. Sherman has missed Jim these past several months. And I can tell you that there's a fundraiser up for Jim. Josh Nason started it over on the Wrestling Observer boards. And let's see, you go to gofundme.com/F/Jim-Valley-fundraiser, or just go to Google and type in GoFundMe and Jim Valley, and you'll get there. Right now, as we're recording this on a Friday night, $49,010 raised. The goal has been bumped up to $50,000, and it's just amazing, and I wanted to thank all of you, everybody who participated. I know Carrie's been thanking people. Pretty large donations from Tony Schiavone, and I believe Chris Jericho and Tony Khan, among others, and probably too many others to name. So thank you, everybody. And I've just stepped over what I normally do here, which is introduce the host. The guest host this week, please welcome our friend Frank Pettiani from the Pro Wrestling Torch. You've heard him on several podcasts, and he does the Raw and SmackDown Primer columns, the pre-show columns, over on the Torch. Frank, you're ready to hop into the Wayback Machine, go back to 1989 and find out whether it's always violent in Philadelphia?
Absolutely. Let's do this. I look forward to going back to my high school years. Let's see. 1989 puts me in about, I think, my junior year of high school. Actually, my sophomore year. So, yeah, this will be fun to go back in time, Pat. Thanks for having me.
Not too much younger than I am. Just enough. Okay. Let's see. So, yeah, don't have any good ratings news this week in terms of our show, but everybody, you know, keep sending in the reviews, 5, 6, or 7-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get the podcast. Every review helps, and especially if you add something to it to tell people why you think this show is cool. Okay, so October 28th, 1989, Saturday night, this is NWA Halloween Havoc settling the score from the Philadelphia Civic Center, attendance 7,300 people. This is the first Halloween Havoc. And it is also the first Thunderdome, Frank, which is probably why people chose the show. Our listeners won the vote this time, and I'm okay with Halloween Havoc 89. It's that Halloween season anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, everybody that's following NXT, you know, they're bringing that back this month on Halloween week, so kind of cool to see that. And it's funny, like, I saw some people on Twitter wondering, hey, you know, I wonder if they brought back Halloween Havoc, and here we are. So in the thick of the Halloween season, it'll be fun to take a look at this.
Yep, this will definitely get you primed for the 2020 version of Halloween Havoc. All right, so the previous night, NWA, or World Championship Wrestling, as the Turner Company was called, ran a show Friday, October 27th, 1989, in front of 4,500 at the Richmond Coliseum. On that show, the NWA television champion, the Great Muta, fought Sting to a no contest. And in the main event, it was the NWA world champion, the Nature Boy Ric Flair, defeating Terry Funk. And those were, of course, two of the main feuds going on at the time in the NWA. And that pretty much covers the main event of this show that we're going to see. Frank, any memories of these guys?
I was kind of on the outside looking in with NWA back then, but, you know, I had my ear to the pulse. You know, I had my I had my eye on what was going on. I knew that Ric Flair and Terry Funk were embroiled in a feud, and, you know, Sting and Ric Flair were enemies, partners, and you know what I mean? So, you know, I knew what was going on. I didn't realize the Thunderdome. When I saw that, I thought that was kind of ironic, and I figured that's why everybody picked it, so it's kind of cool. And, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I appreciate the listeners. I knew we wanted to do this show at some point. Meanwhile, the show airs Saturday night at the pay-per-view Saturday night at 7 p.m., which means that you know, the World Championship Wrestling show on TBS, it starts at 6:05 and it ran at 8 o'clock. So yes, they're running their main show opposite the first hour of the pay-per-view, of course, because, and the answer to that why is, of course, because WCW. That's usually the explanation you get. pregame show was pre-taped on the 17th in Marietta, Georgia. If you sat through the entire 2 hours, you got to see, they didn't have like big marquee matchups on TV in those days. The closest things you got were Sting beating the Italian Stallion, Jerry Sabaw, for those of you who, by the way, the World Spaghetti Eating Champion.
And,
and the other, I guess you'd call it competitive match, the New Zealand militia of Rip Morgan and Jack Victory defeated Richard Sartain and Chris Powers. So, yeah, just a whole lot of squashing going on. They would, yeah. Jim Ross would break in live from the Philadelphia Civic Center to tell fans, you know, hey, order the show every so often.
You would think that they would run that as a pre-show, you know, kind of like what WWE used to do with, like, Heat, or I think they did that with Velocity, too. You would think that they would coordinate that, but, yeah, I guess not.
They would do that in later years, actually. They would, when they went to Sunday nights, they would do, I want to say, like, 94, 95, 96, until they got rid of Main Event. That's what they did. It was the lead into big shows.
Right, right.
Which was nice. All right, the WWF. On Saturday, October 28th, 1989, four shows. Of course. All right, where to begin? Two matinee shows. The A show, their matinee was in Springfield, Massachusetts. On that show, the Macho King, Randy Savage, defeated Jim Duggan after hitting him with the loaded purse of Sensational Sherry. And in the other big feature bout on the show, the Intercontinental Champion, the Ultimate Warrior, defeated Dino Bravo by countout, and what I'm sure had to be a classic. Hogan was not there that weekend, so you know, there was no Hogan show to be the A show.
Oh wow!
Yeah, well, that happens sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, the B show does a matinee in Glens Falls, New York, which of course is the home of Hacksaw Jim Duggan. And Duggan's off, yeah. But, you know, that's how it works. He had many tours. On that show, the WWF Tag Team Champions, Axe and Smash of Demolition, defeated the Brainbusters, Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard. And in the other big feature bout of the show, Roddy Piper and Rick Rude went to a double countout.
Mm. Yeah, so that was after Piper. That was after Piper came back because he, quote-unquote, retired.
Yes. Right,
WrestleMania 3, and then he came back, and that was 1989. So we're talking before the Bad News Brown match at WrestleMania.
Yes. WrestleMania 6. Yes, you are correct.
Yep. Yeah. Crazy.
Yep. That's back in the archives somewhere. Matter of fact, on our Patreon, I'm guessing. Okay. The C show had a nighttime show. They were in Sioux City, Iowa. And if you're a fan of the C-Show, you got to see Rick Martel defeat Brutus Beefcake. And Brutus Beefcake was high enough in the card that I think that would kind of was an upset. And, in the main event, Jake the Snake Roberts beats Ted DiBiase by disqualification.
Ah, yes. Jake and Ted had a long-running feud. I think that was one of the feuds that lasted like a year. Mm-hmm. You know, because they constantly did stuff on television, and I think they did a couple of Saturday night's main events, or, you know, Jake would do a match and Ted would interfere and vice versa, you know, and then I think they had a match for the $1 million belt at WrestleMania 6, if memory serves me correct.
Mm-hmm.
So, yep.
That's true. And that's how the fighting over the $1 million belt began. And the PhD resistance, Frank. The A show at Madison Square Garden on airing on the MSG network. That was Saturday night, October the 28th, in front of 16,000 people, more than double what the NWA drew for Halloween Havoc. On that show, Randy Savage beat Jim Duggan. Again, this time the finish was Sherry's holding Randy's legs on the ropes for extra leverage. And in the main event, the Intercontinental Champion, the Ultimate Warrior, beat Andre the Giant. That's right, Andre the Giant, in maybe under 10 seconds, although it was one of those screwy finishes where the Warrior came in, Andre attacked, the bell never rang, Warrior hit the three shoulder blocks in the splash, and they had a fast count pin. So it's listed as Warrior beating Andre, but Andre, as Andre pointed out after the match and Bobby Heenan pointed out, the bell never rang. So
Yeah.
Screw
you. You know what's so funny? I think I actually remember that because what I used to do back then, like I'd go to the Blockbuster Video, the local video store, and I go look for videos. You know, there's no WWE Network back then.
We all did that, yes.
Yeah, and I think that was on one of those like WWF's Greatest Matches or Grudge Feud. You know, one of those goofy tapes that they used to put out. Mm-hmm. And I think that match was on one of those tapes. I remember that. You know, I don't remember it coming into the show, but now that you brought it up, I remember that that quick match. And God, I remember 19. That was before my parents got MSG. Like, we had cable a while, but we didn't have MSG for some reason. But like, I would tune into it, and you'd hear the commentary, but it would have like the squiggly lines.
Oh
yeah,
so
yeah, you know what I mean? Like,
I saw several. I experienced several pay per views with Scrambled Vision. So yes, I know.
Yeah. Yeah, so like I think I watched like when they had the machines, you know, when they had the Andre machine or whatever.
Yeah.
When they did, like, I remember seeing a match
Big
like
machine,
that.
So. Super Machine and Giant Machine.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
so,
and if you don't
man.
See the MSG shows you want on the network under Old School, you can go to YouTube and just search MSG and WWF, and you'll find several of them. The condition sort of varies depending on who put up the video. All right,
yeah.
The AWA was a thing, Frank. That Saturday night, October 28th, there was an AWA television taping in Rochester, Minnesota, which is one of the hotbeds of the promotion. In the big featured matches for television, Colonel DeBeers teamed up with Pat Tanaka to beat Paul Diamond and Jake the Milkman Milliman. Oh, dear. And in the other big main event, the AWA Tag Team Champions, the Destruction Crew of Wayne Bloom and Mike Enos, defeated the team of Scott Norton and Tommy Jammer.
Oh, yay. Wow.
Yay.
Mike Enos and Wayne Bloom, also known as the Beverly Brothers.
That's right.
Memory serve in WWF. Yeah, that's I was mostly into the WWF back then, but I kind of dipped my hand in a couple of other pots. You know, like they have AWA on like ESPN or something.
I watched
a couple of shows. You know what I mean? Like, I knew who Colonel DeBeers was. I knew like a lot of these guys when they came in, you know, when they brought Perfect in and they brought Rude and the Rockers. Like, I knew who they were. Coming in from AWA, you know? So, I remember it well.
I'm sure I've mentioned this story before, but one of the great AWA stories from that era, the AWA dying era, Gary Capetta, right after they started on ESPN, Gary Capetta asked, what did you think of the show on that aired on ESPN Friday night? And Vern's like, I didn't see it. I don't get cable. Cable's a ripoff.
Oh, God.
Vern Gagne, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. Based on what Wade and like Jason Powell have described of Vern Gagne, that doesn't surprise me. By the way, I should mention with the AWA, I'll never forget, one of the best gifts I ever got was from my uncle. Mm-hmm. He gave me some tape with the Road Warriors. There were two matches on it. There was one where they, I think it was Kurt Hennig and Baron Von Raschke,
I think that sounds right.
And, I think they tied up Hennig in the ropes and they, like, choked him out. So it led to a grudge tag team match. And it was the Road Warriors against Kurt and his father.
And Larry God the Axe, yeah.
God rest all their souls. Isn't that crazy? They're all. I remember that match. And I just remember how awesome the Road Warriors were, you know? And even, like, they had the falling of the Road Warriors, you know, on that what's the show on Vice? Dark Side of the Ring.
Dark Side of the Ring.
Dark Side
yes.
of the Ring. Yeah, and even my 8-year-old daughter, she's like, wow, she actually wants to do a report on the Road Warriors. That's how. Yeah, she actually she thought it was cool, but they were just so awesome. Hawk and Animal, you just tag teams. You don't get better than that.
They were one of a kind, and they led to several attempts to imitate them.
Oh. So, yeah.
Meanwhile, in Memphis, the CWA did their Monday night Memphis show at the Mid-South Coliseum on October 23rd. Kerry Von Erich defeated the CWA Southwest champion Tony Anthony, a.k.a. Dirty White Boy Tony Anthony, by disqualification. And in the main event, Jerry Lawler loses the Unified World title to The Soul Taker. Do you remember who The Soul Taker is, Frank?
The Soul Taker. Are we talking about The Undertaker?
No. The Undertaker was there, though. He was the Master of Pain. And he was actually, okay. And believe it or not, he was actually teaming with Jeff Jarrett on that show.
The Soul Taker. Oh, man. I don't want to embarrass myself.
He's a Hall of Famer. I'll help you. Yeah, he is a Hall of Famer, and he is a friend of The Undertaker's, if that helps.
Hall of Famer, friend of The Undertaker. Oh, Lord. See, I'm thinking Charles Wright. I'm thinking...
That's it. Ding, 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 ding. Got it in one.
Are you serious?
The Soul Taker was Charles Wright, a.k.a. Kama Mustafa, a.k.a. The Godfather, a.k.a. Papa Shango. Yes.
Son of a gun. Wow. Wow.
Yes, Lawler and the Soul Taker feuded for the USWA title in the fall of 1989.
Wow, that's pretty cool. I didn't know that. Yeah, I know. I know him and Undertaker got pretty tight through the years, and I know he's been a pretty good advocate of WWE. He's got a good relationship with them. So God bless that guy. He played a lot of characters. You know, bless him. He did well.
He had a long career. All right. Yeah. The pro wrestling news. That was in the newsletters at that time. The World Series was postponed in 1989 due to an earthquake, which meant that Halloween Havoc is on against a game of the World Series between San Francisco and Oakland, which is probably not going to help the buy rate. Let's see. Meanwhile, Turner had put on an order had come from Turner Broadcasting that there had been an edict in '88 that there would be no blood on NWA television. An edict came out that week saying that there would be no blood in the NWA, whether it was on TV, on house shows, or on pay-per-views. You'll be able to answer for yourself whether that stuck for a long time. And word broke in the Wrestling Observer that the leading candidate to host WrestleMania VI, the Los Angeles Coliseum, off by 1 year, but they did actually pitch the Coliseum for WrestleMania VI. So,
oh wow,
it wound up in Toronto. Okay. As many of you know, our Wayback Playback patron is up at patreon.com/waybackplayback. And since we have Frank Pettiani here with us, I thought I'd explain to Frank how our Patreon works, since he's going in with no prior knowledge. And if I can make that simple for him, then obviously the rest of you will figure it out. Right, Frank?
Absolutely. And anytime you can make something as simple as you can for me, I am all in for it. So I appreciate that, Pat.
Okay, no problem. Here's how it works. We have the podcast. The podcast is available for free. However, some of our listeners like things like being able to get the episode early. With Jim out, it's mostly been like 24 hours early. But, you get the episode early. You get the episodes ad-free, no commercials added onto them like you get on the free version. And, some people want every episode of the show, including the episodes that were locked behind the paywall at pwtorch.com. We made a deal to bring them out from the paywall. But deals like that cost money. So if you want all 318, actually after tonight, 319 episodes of Wayback Playback, and you want it ad-free, and you maybe want to listen to it a little early, for just $4.50 a month, you can subscribe. patreon.com/waybackplayback. All very simple. That's if you'd like to support us some more and get some of the stuff that we add to it every week, like bonus shows that Jim and I have done in the past at other places, for example, or bonus episodes that I've been cooking up with Ken Banks, and the occasional bonus match we throw in for free, that is on the Black Scorpion tier. That will cost you $10 a month. You still get everything that was promised to you from the $4.50 a month. You just get stuff added onto it. And there's another tier if you'd like to advertise on the show. Please go ahead and do that. Reasonable rates are available. As a matter of fact, for a little as $150 a month, we will let you advertise on the show. It's quite a deal. So that's pretty much it, Frank. Do you have any questions?
Absolutely not, Pat. Really looking forward to doing this with you, and excited to be going back in time and digging into a little WCW. Haven't done it in a while, and I'm really looking forward to it.
All right, so that's the commercial. Patreon.com/WaybackPlayback. Sign up today. You'll thank us later. Now that we've set everything up, Halloween Havoc 1989. I am on the network. I am at 1 second in, and I see the moon as we start the show. Frank,
I'm probably a little half a second behind you, but I'm sure if I push play, we should be synced up.
Okay, so everybody join us. We're all going to hit play together in 3, 2, 1, and here we are. Ah, that 1989 graphics.
Man.
Oh, yeah. There's the graveyard.
Yep. Oh, hold on. I'm getting a stoppage here. Uh-oh. Technical difficulties.
Flare, Funk, Muda, and Sting.
All right. Oh, there we go.
Okay. Halloween Havoc 89, settling the score. All right. And there's a shot of the ring.
All right.
There's the Philadelphia Civic Center. And there's the voice of Jim Ross. Okay.
There he is.
All right. Oh, there's all the lights. Jim Ross and Bob Caudle are calling the action.
Yep. Listen to how young he sounds, Pat. It's amazing.
He's a lot. I mean, this is 31 years ago. We were all a lot younger 31 years ago.
My God. And on a personal note, my little cousin was like 6 months old at this point. So I'm like, I'm just in a time warp right now. You know, just thinking about that year.
Okay, Gordon Solie is standing by to interview people.
All right. Oh, my God. Look at them.
Gordon Solie in a tux in front of what looks like netting and like a skull.
Yeah. Okay. So, wow.
Yeah, now, I mean, Terry Funk had been an announcer. He's obviously on the show. Michael Hayes had been an announcer. He's on the show.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know. I actually didn't know they used Terry Funk as an announcer.
They did for a while. Yeah, he was on Worldwide with Chris Cruz.
Okay, that's kind of like what Vince does once in a while when he has nothing for somebody to do. He sticks him in the booth, you know, or during an injury. You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, after Tony Schiavone was gone for this entire year, he was in WWF.
Oh, yeah,
and there's Chris Cruz. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Here we go. Okay. It looks like Chris, from the sounds of it, it looks like Chris Cruz will be talking to the baby faces and Gordon Solie will be interviewing the heels.
The heels, yeah.
Oh.
Such a difference, though. You go back and you just look at, you know, the style.
Look at how young Cruz looks, for crying out loud.
Yep.
And there's Gary Michael Capetta, the world's most dangerous ring announcer. And this is our opener. They don't get intros. I know Frank's a couple seconds behind here, but here we go. All right. This young man, the longest reigning TV champion, I believe at the time, in the NWA history, from the Varsity Club, Captain Mike Rotunda.
My God.
And he is the father of, and I'm contractually obligated to mention, he is the father of Bo Dallas and Bray Wyatt.
And Bray Wyatt. Yeah. It, not for nothing. A sidebar. Bray looks so much more like Barry Windham. He looks more like his uncle. It is crazy.
Okay, there's the Z-Man, folks, and Tom Zink.
They called him the Z-Man here. Okay,
they picked him up from the AWA. He came here and he was on a winning streak. He had just gotten started. He was undefeated at this point. So this, and they're the opener. They don't get music. They don't get intros. They're just sitting there ready to go.
Yeah, now I got. You know, my memories of Z-Man are obviously with WWF when they were doing the Can-Am connection with Rick Martel. And I think they had a WrestleMania, if I remember correctly, I think they opened WrestleMania 3 against Orton and Morocco.
Yes, which you can go back in the – you can actually go back and listen to it for free in our archives.
Yeah.
Jim and I did cover WrestleMania 3. All right, so here we go. Z-Man with the headlock. And normally Jim would be commenting on the fine 80s apparel and fashions here. It looks very 80s. I don't see anything that looks ridiculous yet.
Not much to stand out here. Stick these guys in current WWE and they'd be jobbing or they'd be on main event, if anything. If they're lucky.
Yep.
If they're lucky.
They're considered kind of bland. And we do see empty, and of course they shoot it so that we do see some of the empty seats.
Yep, yep. And you see Z-Man getting the baby face, you know, the energy rolling here. You know what I mean?
Which, getting the shine. Yeah, that's what we do here.
Usually in the opening match.
Well, it's considered, if you're a promoter, it's considered good form if you're trying to get the crowd hyped up to have a babyface win the opening match and have it be and try to put one of your more action packed matches in there.
Yes, yes, it's almost, you know, it's funny, like you almost like putting the fastest guy in the leadoff spot, you know, put one of your good matches to lead off the show. That's why sometimes, like when you hear an Intercontinental title match is leading off, or you know, even a World title match, why not? You know, if it's one of your prime matches, the crowd's hot. Let's go.
And I remember what Kevin Owens said on, I think, one of the WrestleMania 24 specials. You know, either if you're not last, then you want to be. If you're not on last, then you want to be on first.
Yeah, that's a good point. Now Zink is playing to the, or yep, Z-Man actually playing to the crowd. And Rotunda, you know, it's funny looking at Rotunda walking around. He's got that heel. He's got that heel mannerism.
He was great, and I really thought that, you know, they were onto something with him. I think that this was the first time, you know, with the Varsity Club that he had been seen, that people had seen him as a heel, and he did a great job.
Yep. Even he had heel tendencies in WWF when he was teaming with. I came in when he was teaming with Spivey. I didn't see him team with
Barry
Windham.
Yeah, that was the good team.
He was showing heelish tendencies in his interviews, but they never turned him. No. And I think if they did, they might have had something. But here they go at it again.
Right.
And the headlock. You know, it's funny. You don't see the headlocks anymore like that to start out. You know,
nope.
You just don't. That's typically the way it started in the '80s.
Oh yeah, that's very old fashioned. There we go. Nice
job, little leapfrog.
Very athletic. Yep, there we go.
And the elbow.
And Rotunda, he looks concerned, but he doesn't, you know.
Yes.
He doesn't overplay it here. He's like.
Yep, and he's taking his time, taking his sweet time.
Right, okay, let me check. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Here we go.
Oh, what do we got? What do we got going on here? What to do with knee pads?
Well. He's priming the pump here.
Yes.
Setting that up. Okay.
Let's see. So this is the 80s. Did he get those at Modell's? I don't know.
don't think so. Don't think they had a Modell's here. He might have gone to Merle Harmon's Sport Shop for all I know.
Oh, my God.
There we go.
I was going to say Dick's or, Sports Authority, but no way they were around then.
No.
At least not by me.
No, not you know. Yeah, it's weird. You know, the chains that come and go here.
Yep.
Oh, he went to the thumb to the eye. Well,
yep.
Always a classic. Yeah. You don't have to. You know, you don't have to do that much to be a heel.
Nope. Good little psychology to start this out. You know, like he's Rotunda slowing him down. Now he's got him outside.
Right.
So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, Bob Cottle, who is not Jim Valley's favorite announcer. Well, fans, we got a great action here tonight. Sunset Flip, too. Yeah. All right.
And the Sunset Flip. The Sunset Flip never wins. Come on, Tom. You should know that.
All right. He grabbed the tights. Oh, sure he did. There he did, Okay. All right. Yeah, yes, that is Nick Patrick. Yes.
That's who I was wondering. The referee looked familiar. Yes,
Nick Patrick. Nick Patrick did a lot of big matches then too.
The NWO's favorite referee.
They didn't have Tommy Young. They were trying to create a new top referee.
Hey, I work with the Tommy Young. Look at that.
Oh, there we go. Up. All right. Very good.
And now we got the armbar. Randy Orton would be proud.
Yep. Try to counter the armbar. I mean, you know. Some of this stuff, if nobody's used it for a while, it's free for people to, you know, to pick it up and take it again.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And Z-Man's trying to wear him down, you know, trying to tire him out. Rotunda's just kind of measuring him, like, okay, how am I going to get out of this? What tactic am I going to use?
Yeah, I mean, but the matches are structured differently, but one of the reasons for it is they were trying to put on matches that they could do every night, like four or five in a row. And I don't think, and there's nobody, I mean, well, because of the pandemic mostly, there's nobody wrestling four or five nights in a row anymore.
No.
Which is good because it cuts down on the wear and tear on the body. But
You know, you just look at some of these guys now, not to go too off on a tangent, but you look at some of these guys now doing these flips and dives
and these high spots.
And it's just like, my God, you know, that's...
It's amazing, you know. But it's good that they don't have to try to do it every night.
Yeah. And using the ropes.
Plus, you never know which bump is going to, you know, is going to jar something loose. You know, or which one's going to break the camel's back. I mean, I know it's indie stuff, but I've seen guys get injured off of, you know, getting thrown into the turnbuckle as often as it is from some huge botch.
Yep. I mean, look at Sting against Rollins a couple of years ago, and and Finn Balor. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
It's
All right. Here we go. Okay, Rotunda. Yeah, work. There we go. Working the head scissors. I like this.
Yep. Good psychology. Try to wear down the energetic baby face.
And getting the leverage.
Yep.
I feel like Mike Rotunda is pretty much the last piece of the Varsity Club left at this point.
Yeah. Now, refresh my memory here. Who was in the Varsity Club? I feel like I should know this, but I don't.
It's Kevin Sullivan's group. It's Sullivan. Ah. I mean, it was Sullivan, Mike Rotunda, Rick Steiner originally.
Yes.
Let's see. And they had Dan Spivey and Steve Williams in there at times.
So, okay.
Yeah. All right, great collegiate athletes. Yeah.
Yes. Hence the Varsity Club.
It's a perfect bit for guys that you don't quite know what to do with them.
Yep.
They can practice being healed.
That's what you did then. You put guys in a stable and they played off each other and they got some recognition.
Okay. Forced break. Somebody's a big Cleveland Indians fan in the front row.
Ah.
Yes. Okay.
Oh, yeah. There he is.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And let's see, 1989. That is, I believe, when Major League came out. How about that?
Perfect timing for that, yeah.
Look at that. Mm-hmm. And now I have Wild Thing in my head.
That's right. Well, we're not going to see Charlie Sheen on this episode.
No Charlie Sheen. Nope.
Okay, nope. All right. Although it kind of looks like a young Elliot Gould in the front row.
Elliot, where are we? Where
behind the referee.
Yeah. The guy, the blonde-haired guy, you mean?
No. Actually, Nick Patrick's covering him up. There we go. That guy. Yep. The guy with the sunglasses. Anyway.
I see what you're talking about. Okay,
and there it goes. And Rotunda gets the advantage, and Z-Man goes out to the floor. Oh, I should mention the Philadelphia crowd, not necessarily big fans of the baby faces, as you will see throughout the show.
and that carried through over to today. I
mean, oh, yes, it did.
That hasn't stopped.
I mean, that's why, you know, the NWA is able to draw an audience, even though it's at the Civic Center and not the Spectrum.
Right.
Okay, here we go. Okay.
A little bit of outside the ring action.
Mm-hmm.
But I like, you know, it is, they're telling a story here. I like that. Like it's not just, dive spot and, you know, it's actually part of, it's an important part of the match. You know, it's part of what they're doing.
Right. Well, when every match gets time, which is what you'd see a lot of these times on these NWA pay-per-views, when every match gets time, you've got to tell stories.
Yeah, it's not a format match. It's more of a match that's conducive to what these guys can do.
Right.
You know.
And Mike Rotunda can do amateur wrestling, and Z-Man, you know, is no slouch at it. So.
Yep. Yeah. Could almost say Rotunda was like a Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle is what Kurt Angle became.
Yeah, I mean.
A little bit.
A little bit, yeah. The gimmick is definitely that.
Yeah.
I mean, so Rotunda held the TV title for pretty much most of 88, lost it to Rick Steiner at Starrcade, gained it back February 89, then quickly lost it to Sting, who lost it to Muta. So, there we are. Yeah. That about covers the lineage there.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to suplex him back in.
See if I can catch up to you here.
All right. That's a beauty.
And there he is.
Turner says that's it. Going for the cover. Oh, only one. Only a one, really. Yep. Okay.
Yep. It's the one.
You're not that far behind now. All right, abdominal stretch time. And Mike Rotunda, you know, no matter what his character, he loved doing this abdominal stretch spot. Also, Mike Rotunda had a lot of gimmicks. They somehow turned him babyface and made him Captain Mike Rotunda the Sailor, which I still don't understand.
I remember that.
Then Michael Wall Street.
Michael Wall Street.
Then he jumps to WWF and is Irwin R. Scheister.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then came back to WCW, he was VK Wall Street because he's Vincent K. Wall Street, I guess.
Vincent Kennedy Wall Street.
Yeah.
How about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, another long and industrious career there. And then a road agent for a while.
Yeah, I felt bad when they let him go recently.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's it's not a, I mean, I'm trying to remember when he officially retired. I want to say it was like early 2000s. So,
yeah.
He was in the business for a long time.
That he was.
Mm-hmm. All right.
The Randy Orton chin lock.
Here we go. And there's, oh, nice clothesline. Nice clothesline. And you can hear there's a pretty big segment of the crowd getting behind Rotunda.
Yep.
And there's Z-Man's fans.
Oh, missed the drop kick.
Missed the drop kick. Okay, come on.
We're caught up now.
Z-Man wants the finish. I don't remember what his finish is at this point.
I couldn't tell you.
Well, I think we're going to find out.
Yep.
Back elbow, okay. Oh, are we going to get it?
Nope.
Oh, nope. Nope, just going after the... back to the eyes. Very good. Back to the eyes. Okay.
Oh, there it is.
Roll it through. Yep, okay. Might have gotten a three count. Maybe he didn't, but we'll say he did.
Got him.
Yeah. Yep.
Got him.
Yep, well, you know, Z-Man pulls it off.
Yep.
All right. Hey. And they started the wrestling show with a wrestling match.
Exactly. Quick win, too. Quick, I don't mind when they do that once in a while. You know, right, you win off a reversal or something like that. Like, not every match, though.
As long as they're not doing it all the time.
Right, right. And that's the whole key when you kind of spread it out. But, whips them in here. They're showing the replay and the crossbody, the reversal.
I forget what song they're overdubbing here. I forget what Z-Man's. This is at the point where they're mostly using real music.
Okay.
1990 was when they started switching up. Oh, yeah, did I mention who the special referee for the main event is?
There he is.
Did I mention that? Yes, Bruno Sammartino is on an NWA pay-per-view.
Look at that.
And looking pretty pretty tough.
Yep. Oh, he always did. Right. He always did, even, you know, late WWF years.
So this is a match where you win by making the other team's cornerman throw in the towel. So you wouldn't really think you'd need much of a referee, but okay. Mm. It's a very dangerous match, Bruno said. I mean, if you're gonna have a special referee in Philadelphia for something like this, why not Bruno?
Why not Bruno? Yeah. Why not Bruno?
Right.
Boy, I'm surprised they didn't think of this with Roman and Jay now, with the considering Jimmy just threw in the towel, you know?
Yep. Well, they're not going to use a WCW gimmick matches.
Right.
I mean, Triple H can use them because it's NXT, but that's about it.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Gary Capetta standing by. Oh, this is our six-man tag. This is definitely this will definitely be the highlight of this first hour here.
Yes.
I guarantee you.
I think this is the Samoan SWAT team.
Yes, although, we're getting the team of the Midnight Express and Steve Dr. Death Williams.
Wow.
The theme from Midnight Express, the movie, is playing at this point instead of the knockoff.
Now that's, what is that, Beautiful Bobby Eaton. And,
Beautiful Bobby and Sweet Stan.
Sweet Stan.
Right, there we go. And Mr. Jim Cornette, who is a baby face. They are baby faces at this point.
Is that, wow, look at that.
Remember? Yeah, pretty much the entire year, 1989, they're baby faces. How about that?
Dr. Death.
Oh, yes. Okay, here we go. Yep.
I would have never had Jim Cornette as a baby face manager.
Well, I mean, they were doing the did the Midnight versus Midnight feud,
yeah.
And you know, Cornette, hey, at least he's one of us. He's not a damn Yankee, so. I mean, that was the deal. Yep. Okay. Yeah, you don't need to have it up that loud. I don't want to get accused of violating copyrights and all that.
There you go.
Okay, there we go. Yeah. Yeah, better? Jim Cornette is doing the intros because, well, just because. Yeah. Okay, and yeah.
And is Capetta that better?
And Capetta gets to introduce Jim Cornette. There we go. All right, and now let's meet. Now, remember, Paul Heyman was managing the Samoan SWAT team before he got fired legit by WCW, so. Here we go. It's them Island Boys.
And Oliver Humperdinck.
The big kahuna Oliver Humperdinck is their manager.
My God.
Yes, and it is Fatu, Samu, and the Samoan Savage, a.k.a. the Tonga Kid.
The Tonga Kid.
And I believe Humperdinck, I don't know whether it's this show or sometime within a week of this, he announces that they're now going to be called the Wild Samoans.
The Wild Samoans.
Right, which, of course, is a direct shot. But Samoan SWAT team and the Samoan Savage. I mean, you know, The big kahuna. I appreciate them wanting to use the Mid-Atlantic Stars of the past. Oliver Humperdinck was only a main event manager in Mid-Atlantic.
Okay.
I think now, that's the nicest way I have to say that.
Is that the Tonga Kid right there?
Yeah, that's this, Sam.
That's Sam.
Yeah, that's Fatu.
That's Fatu?
Yep.
My God.
Yep.
Looks so different.
Just a lot. Well, you know, when you add a couple hundred pounds, I mean, it tends to change your body composition.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. All right. Okay, and their music, I believe, was the theme from Halloween.
Okay. Hey, I got to tag out momentarily, Pat. I will be right back.
All right. Frank is going to tag out.
I'll be right back.
Oh, I'm sorry, wrong show. Here we go. Time for the six-man tag. Oh, my goodness. Fatu. The Savage. Yep. Okay. Yep. So, yeah, Jim Ross mentions that Oliver Humperdinck once managed Buddy Roberts, which is true. Yep. Okay. Well, Buddy Rogers, excuse me. All right. Here we go. Yes. Okay. Oh, let's see. Here we go. Up. Oh. There's all the, here we go. Here's a list of all the entrance music from back in the day. Oh, my goodness. This is just horrible stuff. Yep. Okay. Well, let's see what we have here. Oh, my goodness. Theme from Halloween. I'm trying to find out the Tom Zink theme song. We'll get to it, I guess. Okay. Shoot. Tom Zink, oh, my goodness. Oh, wow. All right. Tom Zink apparently was using, at this point, the theme from the 1989 Batman movie, da-da-da-da, which I believe is also the theme for Batman the Animated Series back in the 90s. Okay. Fatu, Samu, and the Savage, a.k.a. the Tonga Kid, and the Black Trunks. So, and yeah, Jim Ross is going to spend several minutes Jim Ross is going to run down the college football history of Steve Dr. Death Williams. I don't know if you're aware of this, but he played for the University of Oklahoma. Oklahoma, Oklahoma, Oklahoma. Yep. All right. That's from the movie Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Okay, so, yeah, they're teasing a fight outside the ring. It didn't take much to get the Philly crowd excited. Yeah, just think of the Civic Center as a bigger ECW arena, and this makes more sense. Yeah. This was the style. And Paul Heyman stole a lot of ECW A lot of the ECW vibe from this. That does look like Tommy Young. Wow. Okay. So, yeah, the main storyline involving Cornette is when the Midnights were out for a few months, Cornette became the advisor to the Dynamic Dudes, who are Shane Douglas and Johnny Ace, another babyface team. And there's trouble brewing between the Dynamic Dudes and the Midnight Express. I can tell you. Okay. But look at the great gear here. Between the Midnights and the Samoans. Yep. All right, Stan Lane, the tan, the mullet, the backdrop. Oh, there goes the Savage. All right. The idea was that Savage would come in and he would be the singles wrestler for the Samoans, and Fatu and Samu would be the Samoan SWAT team. I want to say that Samu left some months later, and they just went to Fatu and the Tonga Kid as a tag team for a while. All right, but don't worry, Fatu and Samu would team together again in the in WWF as the Head Shrinkers. So yeah, let's a lot of high quality talent here. Okay. Yep. Ross is telling the story. Stan Lane was a lifeguard in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, when he met Ric Flair, and told Ric Flair he wanted to become a professional wrestler. And Flair, for whatever reason, agreed to train Stan Lane. Maybe he saw potential in him. And Stan Lane can say he was the only wrestler that was ever, you know, personally trained by Ric Flair. Yeah. All right, there's Bobby Eaton. Okay. I believe if you go back in the PW Torch, I think it's in Stan Lane's Torch Talk, he runs down all of this. I forget what year it is. Oh, there we go. And Stan Lane eventually became an announcer with WWF and then became, I want to say, an announcer on ESPN doing powerboat races. Okay. Frank Petiani's around somewhere. All right, there we go. The standoff. Yeah. Here we go. Bobby Eaton started in wrestling at 16, as Jim Ross is explaining. All right. Yeah, so yeah, the backgrounds of Eaton and Lane couldn't be more different, but Stan Lane, a member of the Fabulous Ones, when Dennis Condrey left, you didn't know whether he and Bobby Eaton would mesh together that well, but they did. They worked together. They were awesome. There we go. Samu misses. Hot tag. Wow. And this is all action so far. Dr. Death cleaning house. And yet, Jim Ross loves some. This is the Dr. Death that Jim Ross wanted to bring to the WWF. Didn't quite work out. But it is the Dr. Death that All Japan ended up with in the 90s. Yeah, this is looking a little bit like an ECW crowd. Too many families, though. All right. Still to come in this hour, our main event for this hour is going to be the return of Wildfire Tommy Rich against the Cuban Assassin. Okay, I can't explain that booking decision. All right. Fatu! Rikishi Fatu tagging in. Yes. All right. So I don't know why there's a woman in the crowd dressed as Annie from the Broadway musical. No idea. Ross is pushing Starrcade 89, which is taking place in December and on a Wednesday night for some ungodly reason. That was the one Ken Banks wanted to do. Oh, speaking of which, I can tell you all about Ken Banks and his wonderful, he's our sponsor, and his wonderful company, Ken and Tech's Pet Care of Bangor, Maine. You go to kenandtek.com. That is the business website for Ken. And if you're in the Bangor, Maine area or plan to be traveling there, and you need somebody to look after your pets, Ken is the guy. Very reasonable rates. He does this for a living. He's certified. He's bonded. He's trained. He is certified in pet CPR, which I don't think that many people are. He takes additional courses to brush up on his work. And you've heard him on the show.
Right.
You know the many animals that, that Ken
you,
takes care of.
I appreciate that, and I apologize that I had to cut out.
No, it's okay. Definitely Ken and Tech's Pet Care of Bangor, Maine. Facebook and Instagram, KENANDTEK. And I believe Ken will be back on the show next week as we break in another first-time guest host. It'll be fun. All right, so Bobby Eaton, working the arm.
Yep. There he is, tagged in.
And yeah, that yes, that is Rikishi.
Oh my God.
I know.
It is just
He's not ready to make a difference yet.
I always confuse him and the Tonga Kid. Him and the Tonga Kid are different, right? Are they
They are completely different. The Tonga Kid, he was the don't make me do this. First of all, when Samoans call each other cousin, that just means they're Samoans. All Samoans claim to be cousins to every other Samoan. That's not a joke, really.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's see. Tonga Kid. Okay. Yes, and so Jim Ross is kind of doing the heavy lifting on play-by-play, and Bob Cottle is there to be there, I guess. Okay, Sam Fett. Okay, so Tonga Kid, who also starred in the movie Body Slam, by the way, with Roddy Piper. Yeah, his name is actually Sam Fatu.
Sam Fatu.
And his son is Jacob Fatu of MLW.
Okay.
Okay. Let's see. All right. Let me see. And he is the brother of Rikishi, and he's the brother of Fatu, and Rikishi Fatu, and the brother of Umaga, Eddie Fatu.
Umaga.
Yeah.
God. Umaga spooks me out because I think he's the same age as me. I think
he would be the same age as you. Yes.
Yeah. Oh my God. That.
Okay.
Dr. Death. Now, is that Sweet Stan? He just.
Sweet Stan and Beautiful Bobby. The Eaton's in now.
Okay.
They both have fantastic mullets. You know, don't get me wrong.
And that was a thing.
Yep. Oh, mullets are. I mean, these are 1989 mullets, where technically it's still acceptable to have them. But you'd have some quality mullets going on well into the mid 90s. Now, Samula Anoy is Samu. He's not Sam Fatu. Okay.
Who's he talking to now? This is.
That's Samu.
Okay.
Samu is 57. He is the son of Afa.
Son of Afa.
Yes.
So that would make him Reigns' cousin.
Right. He is the father of Lance Anoya, I guess, for want of a better.
Lance Anoa'i.
Yeah.
Anoya. I don't know how you put it. Whatever.
Right. He was on Raw and I believe is with MLW now. So.
Okay.
Or at least was on MLW.
Okay.
Yep. All right.
Oh.
And he's also the brother of Afa Jr., which Manu, yeah, that's right.
Manu briefly did a little time with Legacy.
Right, okay.
I remember that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now this is, that is, that's Fatu now in the ring, right?
And that's Sweet Stan, yep.
With Fatu. Well, you could see he was starting to pack it on here. he was slowly getting ready for his Rikishi
gimmick. Well, there was, you know, back in the day, there was no money to be made by being a Samoan who was in good shape.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, you know.
Let us think about Yokozuna.
Yeah, guys, Samoans who were the size of, you know, of the Usos or Roman Reigns. It's like, well, Roman Reigns was a football player, but it's like, okay, interesting, you know. Yeah, they weren't quite as in demand as the huge, you know, if you have a Samoan who looks huge and acts like he's a flesh eater, then that's perfect.
Right.
That's really all they cared about.
Now that's
I remember. Let's see, early '89, they brought Fatu and Samu in as just the Samoans, and they sort of had like the gimmick of being like the younger, hipper Samoan dudes, but that didn't last.
Okay. Now this is Samu that's in there.
No, that's a Savage. That's Samoan.
That's Tonga Savage. Okay.
Tonga Kid.
Oh, okay.
Tama, or Tama, if you want to go there.
Yes. Haku and Tama, the Islanders.
Islanders, that's right.
Yep. Not to be confused with the New York Islanders.
No. That's Mike Bossy and Ryan Trottier.
Yes.
Yes.
Who I met one time at a summer camp.
I freaking hated those guys. Sorry. Sorry, Caps fan.
You yes, you being a Caps fan. You and I are at odds. You me and Todd Martin.
Yeah, pretty much. That's okay. You guys, Islanders got the better of us this year. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually Rangers, so.
Oh, okay. Well, then. I don't think we like you guys either.
No, you don't like us either.
I think we took your goalie, though, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yeah, he's done, though. He's done. Well,
that's okay.
That's a babysitter. It's, you know.
All right. That's yeah. They got a young. They have a young goal. Caps have a young goaltender coming up. So
okay. Did they is Holtby still there? Not to get off in hockey.
No,
space.
I think I don't know if he's officially gone yet, but his contract's up, and they're not going to pay to keep him. So
gotcha.
Oh wow!
All right, now we got a little out of the ring action.
That's
here.
Some conk. Bill Watts would be thrilled. Somebody's getting thrown on the concrete.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yes, because Bill Watts didn't want the Mats around.
That's another story, but yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Now Jim Ross does not say when you hear the splat of a body on concrete, you know you're watching the National Wrestling Alliance. No.
Oh yeah.
Is this the NWA where we wrestle? Yeah.
Was this before Bill Watts? Because I remember Bill Watts
3 years
in.
Before. Bill Watts, 92.
92. Okay, because I used to listen to this late night wrestling show. I remember them announcing Bill Watts getting hired and all the rule changes. You couldn't go off the top rope.
Oh, yeah.
You removed all the mats. Yeah, I remember
they,
that.
They actually announced that, and the first, you know, they tape TV, and literally the first match they do, it's Arn and Bobby who are with Paul Heyman against, you know, two jobbers in a squash match. And basically, you know, Arn and Bobby try to do all their heel moves, and at every step, Paul's like, no, you get disqualified. They changed the rule. You can't run them into the ring post anymore. It's like, So I mean, just you know, making sure that the fans had everything explained. No, you can't come up the top rope. I think I could have handled everything that Watts did. I think would have worked, except for barring people from coming off the top rope.
Yeah, you take a lot. Yeah, and. Yeah, he explained that, no, it really doesn't, but, yeah, there's some guys that kind of kneecap, so.
Yeah. I mean, you've got Jushin Liger in visiting from Japan, and he can't come off the top rope. Are you kidding me?
Exactly.
Or you could have done something that says, okay, you can't come off the top rope unless you're a cruiser. Like, cruiserweight matches will allow it, but nobody else.
Or you can't come off the top rope onto the arena floor. You know what I mean? Like, just something.
Something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
I think they actually went with, you can't do the, I think one of the ones that actually made sense is, okay, you can't drop the knee, you can't do a knee to the throat off the top, or you can't do anything to the throat off the top rope.
All right. That,
I think Rude got disqualified from an NWA title match for that.
I could live with that.
Yeah. But yeah, it's, you know, it's 1992, that ship has sailed.
Yeah.
And, you know, the blue mats being pulled up, that just seems, well, like... I mean, you know, instead of thinking, well, the wrestlers are really brave, you're thinking, fans are thinking, well, that's stupid.
Yeah. No, that didn't make any sense to me.
Especially when you've had announcers, you know, like Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone and Lance Russell explaining for years that the blue mats don't protect you all that much. They're very, you know.
Right.
All right, there we go. So, yeah, it's Bobby Eaton taking the heat, kids.
Yep.
Yes.
You don't really see a lot of this anymore, like keeping like the true tag team match where they're trying to cut the ring off
and
keep the guy on one side of the ring. I remember Jesse Ventura really big on that when he was calling tag team matches. And then he got the double team.
Well, because Jesse was a tag team guy. I mean, he and Adrian Adonis were a great tag team.
Yeah.
So, oh, there we go. Biting the arm.
There we go.
Jim Ross points out, look, you know, there's the teeth marks of you know, of Tonga Kid on Bobby Eaton's arm. So,
and the side slam.
There you go. Dr. Death. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. See, this is the thing with tag team wrestling. Like, you know, when you see interference like this, you would think it's a disqualification, but it's not. And then, like, two years ago, some match on Raw, they end the match via DQ with somebody coming into the ring. It's like, you don't call this for 30 years, and now you call it. Come on now.
Well, yeah, Vince would get on his horse. Yeah. I mean, the rules were pretty much explained. The old rules are you got once, your tag partner could come in and save you once during a match. The second time it's a disqualification.
Disqualification.
Yeah. And that's simple enough that you could explain it, you know.
Yeah.
But you know.
So now they're built into a hot tag here. I mean, they're working them pretty good, and we're looking for the hot tag.
Out of these guys, Eaton's the guy you want to get the heat on because he's the guy who can sell the best.
Right.
Because he's Bobby Eaton. Oh, there we go. Gets the knees up.
Oh,
perfect.
There we go.
Heading to the wrong part of town. Well. All right, now he's got to go over and find Dr. Death or somebody. Oh, there we go. Hey, all right. Uh-oh.
There we go. And they tag him Steve. Wow.
Dr. Death Williams. Mr. Oklahoma right there.
And Jim Ross just going crazy.
Oh, he loves it.
Yeah. That's his guy.
Up, up, up and away. Yep. And one guy beats up three guys. That's the way it's supposed to be.
That's what you love in these matches. When you see like one baby face beating up two or three heels, it's like, okay, you know, it's...
That power slam. I love
it. And boom. Kind of missed it a little bit, but still got it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, he's a big guy. It takes a lot of momentum. Boom. Oh, I don't know what that was supposed to be, but...
Okay. That's a botch. Okay. Now, is that sweet? That's sweet Stan,
that's Stan.
Right?
That's Stan Lane. All right, he's trying to... He might do the karate kicks. I don't think he had room enough to do the karate kicks, and he's just like, let's get out of the ring. Yeah, this is broken down in Tulsa, and we're not...
There we go. Okay, see, I can tell the difference. See, I know Bobby Eaton's face.
Yeah. For Stan... Oh, there we go.
Oh,
there we go.
The
racket shot on Oliver Humperdinck. Oh, no. And they knock Lane into the rack, tennis racket.
One, two, yep, there it is.
It's cheap, but there you go. The Savage beats Stan Lane.
Now, you know, it's funny. Like, we talk a lot about crap finishes, but I don't mind this finish. I don't mind this at all. You know, I mean, the Samoans get the win.
Okay. All right, there we go.
I don't mind that. You know, I mean, it's, you know, foreign objects. It's a part of wrestling.
Yeah,
it happens.
Well, yeah. And this is going to keep, and things are continuing to go south between Cornette and the Midnight Express.
Yeah.
Oh, but Sir Oliver Humperdinck did his job. There you go. Up and down. He's no Lou Albano. He'll take the bump and make it look good. Okay, here we go. That's not ridiculous.
Nope.
That's not as ridiculous as you'd think.
No. I mean, you wonder what he's doing still standing there. But, hey, you know,
it's Cornette. He cheats. You know.
Yes.
All right, let's standing by Terry Funk and his manager, Gary Hart.
That's Gary. Oh, my God.
We'll like Gary Hart. All right. Okay, so, the electrified Thunderdome cage. That's right. The roof of the cage is electrified.
Is that? My God.
Yes. Yeah, Gary Hart owns the JTEX Corporation, which the Tex part is Terry Funk, and the J part is Japan, which is Great Muta.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're thinking Terry Funk doesn't need Gary Hart as a manager, but you know, they're trying to tell a story here.
I heard Shawn Michaels on JR's podcast, and he named him Mount Rushmore. He had Terry Funk on there. He had Terry Funk on there.
Oh, growing up in Texas, I absolutely believe he would say that.
Yep. Terry, I think he said Terry Funk, Wahoo McDaniel. I forget the other two guys. Might have been Flair.
Okay.
But...
All right, here we go. Time for the last bout of the hour. This is the one we've been, well, we haven't been waiting for it, but this is how we wrap up the first hour.
Got it.
Here he is, the Cuban Assassin. Hey!
The Cuban Assassin. Okay.
The Cuban Assassin. Okay.
Now,
meanwhile,
I'm going to know who this is when he takes his glasses off, aren't I?
Maybe. Yeah, here he is, Wildfire Tommy Rich.
Tommy Rich.
And no, he is not coming out to Wildfire by Michael Murphy Martin. Michael Martin Murphy, or whatever his name is. No.
Yeah, this definitely sounds like a dub over.
It's definitely a dub over, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Wildfire. Yeah, he's back with the NWA in
1989.
And, you know, I mean, 1989, the start of 1989, Jim Cornette explains this in his 89 timeline. George Scott was booking, and George Scott got the book, and George Scott brought back everybody from his heyday, running Mid-Atlantic, which is how you got guys like the Iron Sheik and Bob Orton and Tommy Rich. And Ricky Steamboat, so it wasn't a complete loss.
I watched. I started a little project. I was watching Mid-South Wrestling, and I saw Ricky Steamboat. Who was he teaming up with in the early '80s? Do you remember?
Jay Youngblood.
Yes. Okay. That's exactly who it was.
Okay, this is David Sierra, by the way.
Okay.
Sierra is the Cuban Assassin.
The Cuban Assassin. Okay.
Yeah. Let's see.
Tommy Rich, I've heard of through Bruce Mitchell. I know Bruce has talked about him.
Tommy Rich had a very short reign with the NWA World title, beating Harley Race and then losing to Harley Race again.
Okay.
So, let's see.
So Tommy Rich is obviously the babyface in this match.
Oh, good, yes. David Sierra also wrestled as Top Gun and as Fidel Sierra in WCW.
Ah.
And, let's see, and as one half of the Barrio Brothers in WCW. Wow.
Hmm.
Okay.
By the way, we had I can't think of the team name, but a flight attendant where I work is a former WCW. The guy who played Firebreaker Chip.
Oh, Curtis Thompson. We just talking about him last week when we did Battle Bowl.
I don't know if he's still with us, but he actually worked for us for a little while. A friend of mine calls me up.
Yeah, I did. I did. I found that on his Wikipedia, so that's true.
Yes. I haven't had a chance to work with him, but... friend of mine called me up and said, hey, look up this guy. And I'm like, oh, yeah, look at that. I can't think of the team name, but anyway.
The Patriots.
The Patriots, okay.
The WCW Patriots. The last three episodes, episode 316 through 318, is us doing Starrcade 91, which was the first Battle Bowl. And I believe, I'm trying to remember, Ken Banks did a week of it. And, I'm losing my mind already. But, yep, I'll look him up. Okay, there's Tommy Rich, up and over. Rich was coming. Yeah, Tommy Rich was another guy they brought back from the AWA. He had a long feud there with Adrian Adonis.
Okay.
Before Adrian Adonis, died.
Okay.
Yeah. And he feuded with Lawler in Memphis for,
That, yep. Yep.
And he,
And
he's just the man,
Tommy Rich slowing it down. Tommy Rich seems like a guy I'd want to study his history a little bit.
Yeah.
Seems like an interesting character,
Met him, and he was definitely an interesting character.
Yeah, so.
Go ahead and watch episode 318. Watch Starrcade and listen to episode 318 if you want to see a Lethal Lottery match with Tommy Rich teaming with Ron Simmons.
Oh,
because there's two guys you wouldn't think have a lot in common, probably because they don't. So.
Yeah, probably.
But I mean, look at everywhere Tommy Rich worked. Georgia Championship Wrestling, Memphis, here, Smoky Mountain, ECW. I mean, he's just,
everywhere. Yeah,
everywhere.
Certain guys you could tell just they got it. They got something.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Yes. April 27, 1981, in Augusta, Tommy Rich wins the NWA title. On May 1st, he loses it back to Harley Race and Marietta. And this was as part of a power struggle between the various Georgia promoters. So,
got it. Yeah. In 91, this is when they're WCW, right? I believe.
Yeah. At this point, 90, they're switching over in 91.
91.
And they're officially WCW.
No.
Oh, yeah. So, there's boring chance. That's not what you want.
That is not good. Nope.
Okay. Let's see. When they turned him, teamed with Eddie Gilbert in Memphis. Oh boy.
Eddie Gilbert.
Yeah. Oh man. I mean, it worked in Southeast for a while. Big part of the Austin Idol Jerry Lawler feud. Oh goodness. Let's see here. And feuded with Nails in AWA.
Oh my
Kevin
God.
Kelly. My goodness. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep.
See. Good old Nails.
All right. Okay.
Supposed to feud.
Let's see. He was just coming off a feud with Lex Luger in the summer of '89.
Okay.
Because he was covered after Ricky Steamboat quit. Tommy Rich was the guy they brought into they decided could fill in. Yeah.
Right.
Let's see. Tommy Rich's last match listed on here, 2015, in Richmond, Indiana. I don't know. I'm guessing he might have had another match since then, but yeah, that's a heck of a career, though.
Yeah. And, I mean, he's got to be what? It's 50s, 60s now, right? I would think.
He is 64.
Okay.
Which means even though he looks pretty old, he's only 33 during this match.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, this definitely looks like a let's give everybody a chance to go to the bathroom match, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, normally the second match is the dead match, but you know, when you book a show like this, there's no intermission, especially.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But this is that. I don't know.
I mean, listen.
I guess they were trying to break up all the tag team matches that are on this show, so.
Right, right. I mean, you know, sometimes people got to understand, not every match is going to be a barn burner, you know? I mean, you got to have a little change of pace, you know? It's right. Like, you know, and they know that, too. I mean, you know. I mean, I used to go to my buddy's houses to watch the WrestleManias, and you know, there was some matches. All right, this is the bathroom break match, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, because after this, we're not going to do it. But the Freebirds against you know, so they're obviously they want to tone everybody down and get everybody ready for that. Yeah, a lot of tag matches on this, as you mentioned.
Oh, yeah, which I mean, but that was one of the things. If you're, you know. If you like tag team wrestling in this time, and this time you definitely were more of an NWA fan.
Yes,
because they took their tag teams more seriously.
Yes, and this was about the time at WWF where you started to see the decline. And like it wasn't totally there, but you started to see the decline in tag team wrestling. You know, they got away from the Hart Foundation and the Bulldogs and stuff like that, and you know,
they did.
So
okay, so I'm sorry. The episodes we did for Starrcade 91, episode 316, the first hour, Joe Feeney, of various podcasts and head of the Creative Control Network, did hour one with us. John Schuyler of AEW did the second hour with us, and Ken did the third hour. And, yeah, we will have guest hosts next week and the week after that, and pretty much try to have them every week until Jim Valley's ready to come back to us.
Yeah, a little suplex there.
So thank you for supporting that. Yep. So yeah, I mean this is Dave Sierra. This is pretty much everything he does.
Yeah.
And he's going up the top rope. I don't know how successful he was hitting stuff in the top rope. But I mean, yeah, he looks like, you know, he's supposed to look like Fidel Castro's you know, mean cousin or something. I don't know.
So did Sami Zayn watch this match and get inspired?
By the Cuban Assassin? I don't think so.
Well, you know, he's got the green pants now, and you know,
his
hands a little bit.
Yeah, okay, I can see it. Oh, I don't know who he was. Thez Press. That's his finish. No, really, that's his finish.
Wow.
Wildfire. They ran calling Wildfire. That's not it.
Right, well, anyway. You know, filler match. It's, you know, it's fine. Yeah. You know, tone the crowd down a little bit and, you know, get their energy charged up for what's next. You know,
for anything else. Yeah.
I can understand that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they can't all be the, you know, you have an 8-match show. But, I can understand the fans are like, okay, this is supposed to be a pay-per-view, right? Why are you giving us this?
Right, right. It's you know, it's funny when you're behind the scenes. You see what's going on, you know, but when you're just a fan and you're watching and you're not really thinking about everything, you're just like...
All right, let's hear from the tag team champions, and then we'll call it a week here.
The Freebirds.
Yeah, Jimmy Garvin screams directly on the mic, let me tell you something, baby. Okay, no. No, Jimmy. And the cruel part is they had Terry Gordy with them for a while, and Terry went back to Japan, so... Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I mean, having Hayes and Garvin together as a tag team called the Freebirds, you know, the problem is you're mostly pointing out that Terry Gordy's not there.
Yeah. It's so weird listening to Hayes or looking at Hayes in this light, you know.
Well, Doc, I mean,
Doc
Hendricks was the jarring part, you know, back in the 90s. I was used to this Michael Hayes.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, God knows how many times, you know, you'd heard Michael Hayes talk on the Superstation in the 80s. Okay. All right. So, yes, the Freebirds will be defending against the Dynamic Dudes, the tag team match that nobody demanded. And we're going to call a stop to it right here. I've got 54 minutes and 23 seconds into the program.
Stand back. There's a hurricane coming through.
For over 10 years, Shane Hurricane Helms has been a pioneer in the podcast game. And now, the Creative Control Network proudly brings to you the record-breaking, history-making, longest-reigning, most entertaining cruiserweight champion of all time, Shane Hurricane Helms, and the Highway to Helms podcast. Available on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever your favorite podcast may be, you'll find me, Shane Hurricane Helms. And if you don't know, Google me. Biatch!
We would like to thank Gregoire Lourmet for the use of his track, Run Faster, Jump Higher. You can hear all of his work at Jamendo.com or on his website, musicepique.com, musicuee-epique.com.
And, of course, next week we will pick it up with the tag team titles. Everybody wants to see the Dynamic Dudes taking on the Freebirds. Okay, maybe not. But I'm sure that people will want to see the U.S. title match between Brian Pillman and Lex Luger that will be taking place next week. So that's good stuff. Let me point this out. Okay. And, of course, feel free to visit us on Twitter. I'm at RealPatMcNeil. Jim is at Jim Valley. And, Frank, what is your how can people see you on social media?
That'll be at Frank Pettiani. So at Frank, then spell the name Pete and put an A-N-I at the end. Always happy to chat wrestling with everyone.
And, of course, if you'd like to know more about Tom Zink, Mike Rotunda, the Midnight Express, the Samoan SWAT team, or Nick Patrick, you can go to pwtorch.com, f4wonline.com, or the Wrestling Observer, or you can visit, or you can go and download your local library app because it's all in books. I don't know if Frank knows Jim Valley's line, but go ahead, Frank. Tell people how they can read your stuff.
So you can find me at PW Torch. You can find my Raw and SmackDown primers when you're getting ready to watch the shows. I encourage you to head over to PW Torch, and I give you background information on what's going on in the show, as well as some relevant social media and some WWE exclusive clips, stuff that we didn't see on TV, as well as my analysis. So go ahead and check that out, and you'll occasionally find me tagging up with Wade Keller on the post shows and Wrestling Night in America with Greg Parks.
Yes. Thank you very much for coming on with us, Frank, and I know how busy you are, and we appreciate it. I know Jim appreciates it too. So we will be back with you same way back next week, same way back time, same playback channel. Until then, yesterday is history, tomorrow's a mystery, and next week is another episode. Good night, everybody.